Pushkin.
I've interviewed many successful people over the years, and one thing I find fascinating is that many of them don't consider themselves business savvy. Take the owners of Tight Knit Brewing. They turn to Chase for Business for everything from banking and payment acceptance to credit cards, and do all of it in one place with the Chase mobile app. And that's helped these brew-loving friends turn a passion into a business. Learn more at chaseforbusiness.com. Make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Talk Easy. I'm Sam Fragoso. Thank you for being here. As you can tell behind my sickly, disgusting voice right now, I'm not feeling great today. And that is entirely the fault of myself and some sleep deprivation and this year's Sundance Film Festival, where I'm not actually sure it's possible to get more than 4 to 5 hours of sleep per night. Someone may be able to do it, but I certainly have never been able to. I'm recording this in between seeing a movie and procrastinating on writing about another one. But this is a shorter, special episode of the podcast. We recorded it here in Park City early last week with the wonderfully talented actress Noelle Wells. Her latest film is called The Incredible Jessica James, which is going to be the closing night film of the festival. In it, Wells plays the supportive best friend to Jessica Williams' protagonist. As always in her work, Wells strikes the perfect tone between serious and playful. On a dime, she can make you laugh, and then suddenly she can make a scene intensely serious, dramatic, powerful. That ability was evident from the start of her career, which was jump-started in 2013 when she became a regular cast member on SNL. From there, she's had bit parts on everything from Comedy Bang Bang to Gentlemen Lobsters. But most recognizably, she delivered her strongest work to date in Master of None, Aziz Ansari's Netflix original about a young actor trying to make life work in New York City. Part of that equation was romantic, which is where Wells' character Rachel came in. Here's a clip.
Should we get something to eat?
Yeah, sure. What about a place across the street?
Yeah, should I look it up on Yelp, see if it's any good?
A large man is walking in there right now, and he seems super excited.
Guess that kind of is like old school Yelp, right? Falling around really excited fat people.
Wells, like last week's guest, Brett Gelman, is someone who is going to be completely and entirely honest with you from moment one. Pleasantries are thrown completely out the door, which is not to say this conversation wasn't pleasant or that she isn't pleasant, because both are true, that, you know, she is and this conversation is. But Wells places candor before all else, which is rare. In turn, we talk about the scariness of social media, partaking in psychedelics, creating art in the wake of Trump, and a lot more enjoyably bizarre tangents. I really do hope you enjoy this shorter but equally significant episode of the podcast. So, finally, here is Noelle Wells.
Thank you.
I didn't know I was doing a podcast.
I'm just totally
it's like inauguration. No.
Fun. How fun that's going to be. You definitely seem like someone, based on, I checked your Twitter a little before doing this, because it's like, I just wanted to see what, you know. I was also bored. That was my excuse for research, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that terrible?
No, I mean, you do your research and, you know, also, like, it should be entertaining for you to be doing a good job. I don't know.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You seem skeptical of Twitter.
Oh, well.
And rather the utility of it. Which is
at
what
this
I was
point,
talking
about. It's just like, there's just a level of, it's like you have a, there's no, you can't go very deep with it. Nobody's really listening to each other. It's very much shouting into a void. I kind of had this epiphany that, you know, 5 years ago, every thought that I had that I put on Twitter, if I had just written down and then later went through it and organized it and wrote a movie or wrote a book or like wrote a treatment or wrote something else, that it would be way more impactful and the energy behind it wouldn't have been so, it wouldn't have been wasted. And I think we're all kind of wasting ourselves speaking into something that's not. And I think it just very quickly goes to the lowest common denominator of all of us, even whether you're liberal or conservative or wherever you stand. I don't really think it's like bringing out the best of any of us.
There's not a lot of nuance there.
None. Absolutely none. And then, you know, sometimes there's like, it feels good to be able to like put something out there. No, I don't care how it'll be read. I know where I'm coming from. But we're at a point where like, I don't know if that's really helping anything.
It seems like your reaction is also a direct response to this incoming president.
No, I've hated Twitter forever.
I'm not denying your hatred for Twitter forever. I meant that like it's now culminated, and it got so bad that I think you're like, you've really, it sounds like you're like cutting the.
I think we all actually need to get off the internet. Most people need to like basically go back into real reality and live our lives in a real way. I think that the election, yes, is definitely a culmination. In a lot of ways, it's like I think I went my whole life living this version of like an ideal world and thinking that it can come true. And then you get like pretty much like the worst case scenario, and you realize, well, what part did I play in this? And also it's like almost like, oh, now I can go back to reality. Like, I actually don't have to play this system, this game that I've been kind of railing against, trying to get through to people. Nobody's been listening. Everything that I feared was going to come true happened. And in a weird way, there's like a sense of freedom in that, being like, okay, well, I knew this whole time, so why am I trying to still play this game that I think is part of the problem that I'm not getting any traction in? What if I tried something else? Does that make any sense?
It makes perfect sense. It makes almost too much sense.
It makes so much sense. It's like, oh, this system is not really working for somebody like me or people that actually want to affect change in like in a real way that isn't particularly self-serving. I mean, it's self-serving in the sense that like I believe that people like me should have a voice and be able to reach their fullest potential, but it's not about me being some kind of like winner in this system.
Yeah, well, you said the thing that I'm fascinated by mostly is, I think I understand where you're coming from.
Uh-huh.
and you're right. I'm not denying it. It's just easier said than done. But the thing you said is that you think most people ought to not be on the internet.
Yeah. I think, well, I just don't. First of all, there's no truth on the internet. Everybody is just seeking out information that supports their point of view. The internet's also, people give like a lot of authority to what they read online. Mm. And if you, I mean, when I was a kid, I used to make websites. I interned a place in college where I made all the Wikipedia pages, and I very quickly saw how everything's just kind of a lie and it's all manipulated.
Are you saying all the internet is?
I think most of it. I don't think that there really has been. I don't really see very much on the internet that isn't driven by some kind of lowest common denominator and like some way to make a quick buck. Okay. And the things that are trying to do like kind of live through maybe some kind of honesty or some kind of integrity are definitely not rising to the top.
What about like the New Yorker?
Well, what about the New Yorker? It also comes in print.
Yeah, but but it exists primarily now online.
I mean, yeah, you could say that, but also it exists in print. I don't think you need the internet for the New Yorker. And also the way that the internet works is like people now can just be like, well, the New Yorker is like elitist news rather than, you know what I mean? It's just like anybody can like believe what they want. Donald Trump was tweeting articles from a fake website, from a fake news website. So it's like very quickly, it's like this is going to explode. I mean, this is just going to ruin the world way faster than you could even possibly imagine.
You're sounding very cynical about this.
I'm not cynical. I actually feel very optimistic. I just think that at this point, as a self-preservation and also for the like the spirit of our culture, I think we got to get off.
Okay.
For the most part. I mean, I'm sure if there's a way for us to like interact with it in a healthy way, in a way that it doesn't rule our lives, and I think it's can definitely remain as a resource, especially as I think organizations kind of grow a conscience with how they use the internet. And but until that comes, like, we have to start making meaning back in our own real lives.
do you think people were leading more meaningful lives?
I don't know. I was a kid, so I don't have any capacity to know what other people's lives were like. But I do think there was a level of reverence for doing good work. And I think, like, creative integrity and intellectual integrity was valued a lot more, or at least it seemed to be. Who knows? I mean, you might have gotten to the top of these other organizations that if you get into an organization you get exposed to the fact that it was never like that. But at least to me, there seemed to be like a level of idealism that everybody was sort of reaching for that does not exist on the internet. And in fact, doesn't make money, and like, you obviously know how the internet works. And
I do. I'm just teasing your ideas out. I'm fascinated with them.
Okay.
Because I think what you're proposing is a little dangerous.
Okay. I mean, this is actually just from a creative standpoint. I'm not the internet.
This is
like contain information, only certain people can have it. But I do know, like, I get off social media every once in a while for a couple months, and my life becomes, it's like where the internet has created this myopia amongst everybody, and nobody has a long view. And until you stop sort of feeding this cycle of like this short sort of bursts of information, short like fixes, you can't really deepen much in your life.
Yeah. Agreed. So here's my point. Now, by the way, this is not me saying I think you're right, but I think you're right only theoretically, in that I don't know. It feels kind of irrevocable. I don't think we can go back.
Like, I don't know, but
we'd have to literally blow up.
Nah, because I think 4 years ago, I was in the same state that most of my friends are just now coming to. Like, after Sandy Hook, I like had a meltdown online. I like would fight with everybody on Facebook. I basically had to, it made me so sick.
You're gonna say coming to Jesus.
I came to Jesus moment in a sense, but it made me so incredibly sick and so angry and frustrated and heartbroken by everything. And you can't continue living that way without going insane. So it's taken me 4 years, I guess, but I've come to I have a much more healthy sort of relationship with the internet. But I'm taking it even step further. Like, every year I get, like, a little healthier with it.
Right.
And I think it's just going to take time, and it's going to take leading by example. And, yeah, sure, maybe there will always be people that whose whole lives are kind of caught up in it. But I think there will be, I think for people's mental health, I think people are going to start, like, distancing themselves from
it. I for sure have. Yeah, there's two parts of this. And that in order to, unfortunately, advance in your career, in some ways, some people really do have to use it often, because the way an audience grows on there is like you're there. They reward prolific tweeters, you know, and I've never been good at that.
But that's your audience within Twitter.
Sure, sure. But sometimes that can be translated into real, like, dollar, like, potential jobs.
Sure, but don't we see a problem with that? And so
No, disagree. No, so, no. Yeah, I don't disagree that it's hugely problematic.
Yeah.
It's almost exclusively problematic. It's so dangerous.
It's so dangerous. I think at this point it's like, I don't want to play this game, and I would rather not have a career than poison the world.
My thoughts exactly. Yeah. So I've distanced myself to where, because people have said, like, you're not on Twitter that often. I'm like, for my mental health, I can't be.
Yeah.
I know it's not good. I know it's not good for us.
Yeah. And I think, here's the thing, it just takes, like, a bunch of smart, capable, but, you know, people that are still creating things, it just takes a bunch of them for people to be like, oh, that seems like a good idea. Mm. And then, you know, it'll take time, but I think it'll happen.
You mentioned myopia, though, and don't you think the internet has done that thing where a lot of stuff has become more visible? I'd argue that that's like maybe the best part. It's the most terrifying part as well. But all these incidents that have happened in America,
oh, right,
have become exponentially more visible with the internet.
I think that that's...
Wouldn't you lose some of that if we signed off?
Like I said, I don't think that the utility of the internet will ever disappear. And like, I'm talking about the way that we interact with it socially and the way that it literally drives everything. As far as access to information, I think that just like any resource, like a library, like you would hope that that would remain and still be a part of the world. And like, if there's a way for somebody to expose injustice in such an immediate way, like, I'm not asking for like censorship or but like, obviously you don't lose that utility. I'm just talking about distancing ourselves culturally from letting it be what our culture is.
When was the last time you were in the library?
When was the last time? Oh, that's a great question. That's such a good question. I used to tutor in a library like 3 years ago, and I would go to the library and tutor there. But I feel like I've been to a library more recently than that. I haven't checked out a book from a library in a really long time.
It's been a long time for me.
But I also have the capacity to just buy books now. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm wondering if I would go to a library more if I couldn't just, like, purchase a book fast.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you a good tutor?
No, I wasn't.
You're not patient with the kids?
No, I was patient with the kids. It was a very hard... I was, like, tutoring kids in East Los Angeles, and I barely could take care of myself, and then having to drive in 2 hours of traffic every day to go to these people's homes, and it was just emotionally unbearable. Like, I couldn't do it, and it was very heartbreaking, and I feel like I failed a bunch of kids, but at the same time, I had to, you know...
Wow, you're dropping a big one.
No, I mean, but that's just... I wasn't a good tutor because it wasn't... Like, I also very quickly saw, how it all works. Like, I'm just like, oh, these poor kids, like, I don't know. There's just, like, a level of schooling that I think, I have a lot of opinions about a lot of things, but it was like, the standardization of their learning and how it was all about, like, testing and stuff. It was very soul-crushing to do it and to be a part of it, and it just felt very helpless in all respects. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's heartbreaking to hear.
Yeah.
So you gave
this up. Is like a very dramatic podcast right now. We just jumped right into it.
Yeah, well, that happens sometimes. You were like, your spirits were broken.
Yes.
And how did you bounce back from that?
I think most of what's happened over the past 5 years of my life has been more like a soul search personally and like learning how to repair myself and like my own history, and that
soul search is adjacent to you doing more acting.
Well, working, yeah, and yeah. I mean, but yeah.
What?
No, I don't know. I'm trying to understand what that. Like, yeah, like
why I mentioned that.
Yeah, well, I think creatively, this is my field, and I'm a writer, and I want to create things for the rest of my life, and I really love comedy, and I think that there's something incredible about movies and telling stories that, I think goes hand in hand with like a personal evolution. Like the stories that I want to tell and the projects I'm a part of sort of evolve along that journey.
Right. I mention it because it's a matter of like time spent, mm-hmm. I guess, because you're acting more and writing more.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, is it harder to have like a soul searching, like the time to like deeply, be introspective even, like when you're as busy as you seem to be.
I actually feel like I have more time than I've ever had before because I've gotten rid of lots of things in my life that I don't need and lots of like...
What do you get rid of?
Just like whatever the mental garbage was in my brain, and I spend more time being contemplative and digging deep, and there's actually way more time. The more I take care of myself and the more I sort of go down an introspective path, the better I am at everything that I do. The better I am at my jobs, the better I'm... And also it's like you're able to negotiate what work you're willing to take on and like what aligns with you, and you're not as easily distracted by things that don't line up with that.
did Master of None align with what you
wanted? Yeah, I thought that felt like a very, that was like one of those first big alignments where I was like, oh, I'm like fully prepared for all of this. I loved the stories we were telling. I liked the sense of honesty that it had. I liked that I got to be myself and I got to bring my, like, my top intelligence, intellectual and emotional intelligence to the show. Mm. And I liked that it was...
Your character's certainly a mix of both of that.
Yeah. And you know, it could have been more and it could have... But fortunately, it was like... I think that show's specific, especially... was more of like an affirmation. It was like, you know, I've been like kind of struggling to find my place, and it was there where I was like, oh no, I'm fine, I can do this. Not only that, like when I actually get to use my voice, it's the most impactful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were searching for where you fit into the landscape of things.
Yeah, and you know, I think the industry is stupid, and you know, like there are a lot of really terrible projects floating around. And
I thought you were gonna say terrible people.
I mean, we can also say that, but there are also a lot of really wonderful people, too. And I think it's just finding that sort of that stream that you fit in, like stream of fish that you'll get to swim around with for the rest of your life, I guess.
Why do you think it was a challenge for you to find your footing?
I don't think it was. I think it's a challenge for anybody to just kind of find themselves. And so I don't think it's anything unique to me.
Okay.
And I actually... It was never really a challenge for me to know where I was coming from. It was more of a challenge for me not understanding why other people didn't understand it or weren't coming from the same place as me.
Is the first thing true that you said, like, it was never confusing for you?
Yeah, no.
Is that because you have, like, a pretty solid sense of self?
I don't really know why. I've always just kind of known...
Is my theory completely wrong?
No, I think that it's fair. I think, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm not horribly insecure, but I...
That could be part of the sense of...
Yeah, I think... True.
It's definitely part of mine. Are you kidding?
I think I'm very... I think what drives me is, like, sort of being honest always, and that will be, like, where I am at any given moment and how things are making me feel. And if I'm uncomfortable, I'll say it. And I think that in and of itself navigates things. So whether or not that's a strong sense of self... a really strong intuition, having no boundaries or something. I don't really know what it is, but it's hard for people to, like, manipulate. I also cannot be manipulated by very many people, and, like, I think, yeah.
Are people trying to manipulate you often?
I think everybody's trying to manipulate everybody almost all the time. And it's really hard to find people that are just coming at you from, like, just a really honest place.
Okay. How about right now?
I don't feel no. I don't feel manipulated.
I don't see what I would be even...
Well, maybe you're not a manipulative person, but some...
Oh, I think I am.
You do?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But I try to be rigorous about it.
Yeah, well, that's good to know that it happens. And but if you did start manipulating me, I will. I would...
You want to press that button? We do have the manipulative button.
Uh-huh.
We can just click and it makes a noise.
I feel my boundary getting crossed.
Yeah, you said you have no boundaries.
Yeah. I mean, like, more like I don't pretend to be things that I'm not. And, like, and then I'll, like, share. I think that's it. It's like I'll share anything with you, and probably sometimes it would probably be a lot smarter for me to, like, craft an image or say, like, the right thing, but it, like, feels gross to me.
Smarter in the short term.
True. I think maybe in the long run people will be like, oh, that Noelle, she's always straight shooting.
Yeah, it's been true. You've been very honest and forthright here. Has that gotten you into uncomfortable situations?
Your
whole life is an uncomfortable situation?
Well, no, I feel like my whole life, but that's what I'm kind of saying about being confused why people don't seem to be coming from where I'm coming from, because I just take it as a given that the world, like, I'm like, oh, honesty is the best policy and truthfulness and fairness. And then when you come up against people that aren't that, it can really, for me, my whole life was very soul crushing. So my big shift has been, like, when I said that, you know, Donald Trump getting elected is kind of a liberating thing, because I've been sort of railing against this version of reality my whole life. And then I realized, like, I'm just hurting myself.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if I disengage from this cycle of speaking my truth or whatever, speaking what I know is the truth, and then people not hearing it, and then I'm getting hurt and getting confused and getting mad. And if I can just, like, disengage from that and then just start living a life of, like, being the kindest, the most professional, but also like the strongest version of myself, I think that will end up doing more good. But I was constantly my whole life getting in a fight with teachers and principals and like, I don't know, my parents, like anytime.
You're combative with your parents?
Yeah. I mean, I think if people are doing things wrong, yeah.
What were they doing? What do you mean?
It doesn't matter. We could just skip this part. I think I've come to a good place. But, you know, it's like that soul journey that I've been on we can close the door on my traumatic childhood and I can be myself now.
I'm doing my best to get to that closing door.
Yeah.
It's hard, though.
It's so hard.
Because it's also, but
it's so hard, but it's possible.
It's totally, I know it's possible, mm-hmm. but it's maybe, I just wanted them to be perfect.
Your parents?
Yeah, but I think that's what we all, like, that's the frustration, is like, I wanted them to just do it. No,
but I mean, that's like heartbreaking in so many directions, because also you find out your parents are just people. And
yeah, and I knew that at a young age, yeah. but I don't know. I just think I wanted, but they're great parents.
My trip was my parents were very imperfect people, but that was always my past with them, was like anytime they would do hurtful or terrible things, I bent over backwards trying to understand it and then put all the blame on myself.
Yeah.
So I tried to become a perfect person, and that was very... I'm out of that cycle now.
That's good.
You know, there's always, we all deal with our things. Well, I hope, how are you and your parents now?
We're good.
Good.
It's not really me. It's more, I think I meant more like, it would be neat if they, no, that's such bullshit though. It's such bullshit to say like, I wish they were perfect. I wish that there was, because they were clear foundational things for me. But yeah. I don't know. We mythologize our parents as when we're. I always, you know, we thought them to be.
They're the first things you see and love for no good reason. Except for the fact that they came first.
Yeah, sometimes I'm not sure about the reason. I'm skeptical of the reason.
Just because they were first.
I know.
And also because humans are love. Like when you're born, you are. All you know is to just love unconditionally. And I think that that is the foundation of human connection. But then it gets all fucked up. Down the line.
Can you imagine if we like loved people the way we love our parents?
Yeah, well, we should all be trying to, I guess. Or if you don't love your parents, I think if you can.
That's either a really fucked up way or a very healthy way. I don't know.
How about if you just loved yourself like you loved your parents? You gotta love yourself, dude.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I say that, but I don't, you know.
Do you believe that?
No, for sure.
Rather.
I've done enough drugs to know that you need to love yourself.
Yeah, I think I've done the same. Yeah,
we gotta figure out a way to like bring that into.
That takes like one mushroom trip.
Yeah, for me. But then it's not sustainable, and then you gotta keep figuring out how to create it.
We have to keep doing mushrooms. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, unless it cured you immediately.
No, it's no. Definitely not.
Yeah, no. Mushrooms are definitely that thing that like. My friend described doing like psychedelics as you go and you see all these truths and then you come back, but you only take a brick with you. Like you get all these, it's like there's a house of all the answers, but you only can take back a brick. But the more times you do it over a lifetime, you get all these bricks and hopefully you can build a house that makes sense by the end.
So we're advocating here for moderate, responsible psychedelic drug use.
I mean, always. But you can also get...
I agree.
You could also get that from community or like a healthy church experience or whatever. You could get bricks other ways.
You can get bricks other ways.
Bricks are available in all sorts of forms. Painting, kayaking,
You're just naming stuff out.
No, like volunteering for like shelter animals. Like there are plenty of ways
to get
bricks. But the idea in life is to... have sort of like these peaks, love sort of experiences.
Yes.
Bring them back and try and live them day to day.
100%.
Yes.
Did you have a particular, do you remember one experience that was like notable?
Like mushrooms?
Yeah.
Or any psychedelic?
Yeah.
I mean, my first time was pretty notable because it was like, I could feel energy and I could feel vibes and it made me.
How old were you?
I think it was 24. Okay. It was recent. Yeah. But it was enough to shift. It was like, oh, everything that I've kind of been told isn't true. Vibes are real. And that in and of itself is like, oh, if vibes are real, then I need to be careful about my vibes.
Right. Yeah.
And then it became like a quest to clear my vibes. But and also
I did not expect you to say that sentence.
Yeah, man, that should be my next tweet. sorry, guys, I'm not on Twitter anymore because I'm on a quest to clear my vibes. No, but like
people would love that. They'd go crazy.
I
mean, for that.
I do tweet like a lot of like clearly like a lot of like I do drugs tweets. But
but have you ever tweeted on drugs?
Oh yeah.
I'm
so functional on mushrooms. They feel like antidepressants to me, or like what they must do for other people. Ah. I feel so normal and so myself. So that was another thing. Like the first time that I did mushrooms, I felt so happy, and I'm so sad normally that I was like, oh, I can actually be happy. And how do I get here more times than like more of my life than not? And so I think that that's like a pretty ineffable experience.
Why are you sad normally?
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, how could you not be sad? Look at the world. But
I know all that.
Yeah, I think, but I don't know. I couldn't tell you why I was so sad my whole life. I mean, I can now, but it would be like me having to go into my whole entire childhood. And yeah, but I think I like pick up a lot of people's sadness and pain, and I like hold on to it, and I think it's mine, and I think I have to hold on to the world. But then when I don't know, sadness is just like a part of my life.
Do you think are you someone who takes things very personally?
No, I don't take anything personally because I understand why people do the things that they do.
Oh, that was a confusing response.
I don't take things personally. I don't get offended. I get hurt a lot, but that's different. Like, I'm hurt by people's actions, and it's a very physical thing, but I am able to separate it out from me and that person. Like, I don't think that the things that people do are them, and very rarely, like, can I take that personally, because I know everything's just conditioning, and yeah.
You know, like, sentence to sentence, I'm, like, genuinely taken aback by the things you're saying.
Really? In, like, a what way?
Well, it's just so many different... So many different versions of you in this,
yeah.
In this conversation.
Yeah.
I think it's great, though.
Yeah.
Because at once there's a lot of stuff. You say things in a way that you're like, 2 + 2 = 4, and this is clear logic, and this is math. Uh-huh. Like, I act this way because of this and this and this.
Yeah.
And then there's other times where I'm like analyzing this on the spot, but I, you know, you seem less certain.
Oh, well, my point of view of reality is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
But I'm a hyper-logical person, so that's what you're picking up on.
I feel like this needs to be injected more into your work moving forward.
Well, you'll see it. It'll come out.
It'll come out.
It's coming. It took a while for me to...
Not to say... I think Master of None is the closest
that wasn't
version.
That wasn't my show, but like what it did was it was a stepping stone to me being... You know, and And then there's also just more subtle ways to do it, like, but don't worry, I'm working on plenty of things, and
I'm crazy worried. I spend my days being like, why is she not?
I know. You're tweeting at me constantly, like, where are you? You should be sharing your thoughts. But I did just write and direct a movie that will be coming out soon.
Oh, really?
That I starred in. That it's, you know, it has some of these ideas in it, but it was it's also an encapsulation of like sort of where I was a couple years ago. So it's like somebody, it's a coming of age story, and
okay.
But like I have lots of things planned out, but there's like a definite trajectory, and I have to find my footing voice wise to be able to like own the things that I say confidently.
When is this movie gonna happen?
It'll be premiering in another major film festival soon.
At a festival near you?
Yes, night near you. Maybe. Okay. Sort of near you. So near somebody.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Are you feeling good about it?
Yeah, I am. You know, it was like a...
When you got that acceptance letter.
Uh-huh.
What was that like?
It was... making a movie is such a crazy experience, and it was my first one, and... I just feel like I went through a war. And so it almost felt like I was able to close a door on, like, an experience, and I get to move into the next phase of it, which is just, like, now I get to show it to people. Yeah.
You said you had a lot of stuff planned. Are you a big planner?
It's not that. I just have ideas that feel logical to, like, come out in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's like if I did my big drama next, people would be like, what the fuck is this person's problem? Like, who does she think she is? But if I slowly build, I promise. Like, there's like a rhythm to the way that things should be evolving and out of what I do.
You're assuring me right now. I don't think people would be like, hey, fuck her. I don't think they would be that angry.
I think you just have to, for people to hear or to see things with the right love of openness or with the benefit of the doubt, that you kind of have to earn, like, people just accept that you do it now. Right? Like, you don't
earn their respect, or it's
like respect, and also it's like, oh,
capability.
Yeah, your capability thing? And like the little details start, like, people aren't tearing it apart at, like, some level. It's just taken for granted. It's like just an obvious thing that, oh yeah, now that's her next thing or whatever. Maybe I think about it too much, but it just seems kind of, there's just, like, that impulse or that intuition to, like, and also I would like to be better to be able to take on the bigger things that I want to do.
Are you living in Los Angeles or New York?
Yeah. Where do you live?
Highland Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I just moved to Silver Lake.
Ah, yeah. Very good. Yeah. So I just moved.
To Highland Park?
In August, yeah.
Yeah.
And what has been your experience as, because you're New York, right?
No, LA.
No, but prior, you were born?
I was in Texas. I'm from Texas. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So I'm from Chicago, and when and then I went to San Francisco, but even all of it is radically different than living in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Do you find it to be a place that's conducive to
stuff?
Healthiness?
Yeah. I feel like I moved a lot as a kid. And never felt, anywhere that I ever lived, it never felt great.
Your parents had a lot of different jobs?
Yeah. And there was, like, a weird, I thought I was going to hate LA. I thought it was going to just be a bunch of douchebags. And it was, like, the first week that I was there, maybe it's just the sunshine. I don't know what it was. But instantly, I felt healthier as a person. And I think there's ways to navigate the city to live, like, a really healthy, productive, supportive life. And it's so pretty. It's, like, it's actually very beautiful.
Yeah. But see, I agree with this, but I think people who don't live in Los Angeles would say this is us getting brainwashed.
Oh, right. No, it was an instantaneous fact. Like, when I got there, I was like, oh, fuck, the secret is that LA is amazing.
Yeah. It's just, it's a weather thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing not to have months of the year where it's just, like, impossible to be outside.
Yeah.
it's a weird fact, but it's, like, it's true.
And I think, because I grew up in Texas, in, like, very hot parts of Texas and very humid. And then there was, like, AC inside all the time. I was, like, there was no temperature or no atmosphere that ever felt okay. And then going to LA and you're just, like, you take for granted the weather. You just take for granted the air. Like, you're just, like, I feel normal.
Also, the second part that people are, I think, skeptical about, and that I'm still figuring out, it's definitely the people.
Yeah. People kind of just, like, are, like, oh, you're living your truth. Cool, man. Like, and you're like, I'm sure there are plenty of awful communities in LA you can kind of get wrapped up in.
But you've avoided those.
Pretty, for the most part, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
100%. Though you're in an industry that, aren't there people, like we talked about, trying to manipulate you?
Yeah, but I'm just allergic to them. So in a lot of ways, I
you see them and immediately run away.
Yeah, there's this part of me that is kind of a hermit, and I hate it. I don't want to be a hermit. I actually really want to be outgoing, and I want to...
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I can see that.
You can? That's not fair. Why do you see that? So I talk too much? I have too many
I just thought it'd be funny
angry
to say.
Thoughts. Oh, I don't want to be, though. But I've been finding more and more, like, people more like me who are supportive.
Also hermits?
But yeah, more hermits that then every once in a while we crawl out of our homes to go watch a movie.
What about walk? You can walk around.
Well, I love walking. I mean,
doing that Echo Park walk around, yeah. I love that.
No, I get it. When I say I'm a hermit, it's more like I don't go to parties or I don't do the scene.
What's that? Are you confused by...
No, I don't know what to do with my arms. They're very long, and I don't know what to ever do with my hands or anything.
Hmm. What about, like, the rest of your life? Do you know what to do?
With the rest of my life?
Yeah.
Be nicer. It's like...
It seems like that's not
harder.
An issue you have.
Maybe more like than getting out on my own. Here's something that I did have like a stark, a real big realization that I had recently, which was that I've been so obsessed with my own pain my whole life, and that I need to get out of it, and that's like a level of there's like a sort of a narcissism to it, that's like my new step is like. Okay, what about not me?
Yeah.
What if I just stopped identifying with all the pain in myself? What would happen? So.
I guess we're going to find out this year.
We're going to find out this year.
I mean, this is a big year.
This is a huge year, 2017.
Yeah.
I've been joking that 2016 was like a John Lennon solo career, like the things that I'm kind of listening to, and then 2017 are like my George Harrison solo career. Like, those are the things that I'm listening to now. So I'm trying to come to that like be here now zen sort of place, well, rather than like crying over my mom.
Nothing wrong with George Harrison.
No, there's something. It's great. I think he's maybe underrated.
Totally is. Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Special thanks this week to Michelle and Monica at Falco for arranging this conversation. If you're in Park City this week, be sure to check out Noelle and the incredible Jessica James, which closes out the festival Friday night. Also, Noelle is going to be in a ridiculous amount of movies in 2017. I think she's like in 6 of them, including Happy Anniversary, Infinite Baby, and Mr. Roosevelt. So keep an eye out for those. If you want to check out her work now, like today or this weekend, you can stream the first season of Master of None on Netflix.
People who need people.
If you enjoyed today's episode, you may enjoy past conversations with folks like Ben Schwartz, Mac DeMarco, Kate Micucci, and Zoe Kazan. If you're not currently doing so already, you can subscribe to the program on iTunes, SoundCloud, or your favorite podcasting app. If you want to drop us a line about anything, feel free to email the show at talkeasypod@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at talkeasypod, as well as our website, www.talkeasypod.com. Our music this week is by Jin Sang and Vanilla. Our executive producer is David Chen. Graphics by Ian Jones. Illustrations by Krishna Shenoy. Social media by Maria Mayella. Our associate producer is Valerie Ettenhofer, and the show is produced by Nora Knight. I'm Sam Fragoso. Thank you for listening to Talk Easy. Next Tuesday is Kate Berland. I'll see you next week.
The tradition of breaking tradition continues with the return of the Unconventional Awards from T-Mobile for Business at Mobile World Congress. This is an event that celebrates innovators whose bold actions took their industries to new places. If that sounds like you and you're a T-Mobile for Business customer, enter today. If you win, you'll be publicly honored amongst some of the most influential leaders in industry, and me, I'll be there too. Enter now at T-Mobile.com/unconventional awards. See you there.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love: books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.